Welcome to the University of Dallas podcast. I'm Greg Roper, chair of the English department here at the university, and we're here today with a guest speaker we've had this week here at the end of March 2019, Dr. Barbara Nicolosi Harrington, who came to speak about Hollywood and the church 20 years after John Paul II's letter to artists, and gave a marvelous talk to us yesterday. Thank you for that, Barbara. I thought we'd just begin by you telling us a little bit about your background, your education, and how you got to where you are today.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. And it's great. I've been trying to get everybody to listen to me talk about the 20th anniversary of John Paul II's letter to artists. So it says something about the enlightened quality here at UD that that you bit on my pitch. So yeah, I started with a very Catholic family, a very devout, and then went on to Magdalen College, which is now Northeast Catholic College. But I had an education very similar to what you are doing here. No electives, strong liberal arts core, Socratic seminar methods, no textbooks, only original sources.
There you go.
That made me who I am. It made me as a who I am as a writer, who I am as a thinker, and who I am now as a narrative writer and a dramatist. So I went on from there to the convent for 9 years. I was with the Daughters of St. Paul, which is a media congregation, and I learned how to be quiet and have 3 hours a day of meditation and prayer and reflection, and also worked in ministry all over the country, and that was very formative for me too. And then I came out and I came out of the convent after 9 years and made the next, you know, logical jump, which was to film school.
Of course.
And then to a Hollywood career as a development executive at a small production company in Hollywood. And then as a writer, I started pitching my screenplays. Pretty soon I was invited to start a program to help the writing from Christians be better. I had written an article for Crisis Magazine. My friend Dale Hudson wrote me and said, or called me and said, how are things going out there? And I said, wow, I came out here thinking Christians were being martyred in Hollywood, and I've learned that they're committing suicide. And he said, what do you mean? And I said, well, the stuff we're giving the industry is bad, and they don't have to take us seriously. So that got put in an article, and then the evangelicals in Hollywood called me, an evangelical ministry to Hollywood called Intermission, which was a fellowship of about 300 professionals who were all evangelical Christians. And they said to me, would you help us solve this problem? And so they said, if we can get the money to do it, will you do it? And I said, yeah, sure. So that was, we started on Feast of Conversion of St. Paul, January 25th, 1999. And it's still going 20 years later.
And that's the group you call Act One.
Yes, Act One program originally started for writers. We did it for writers alone for the first 4 years. And then it became very obvious to me that it wasn't going to be enough to train writers to write beautiful scripts if the people buying the scripts weren't going to recognize them. So then we said, well, we have to train producers. We also needed the producing program because a lot of our writers, it turned out, didn't have enough writing talent to really make a go of it in the field. So it's like, what are we going to do these people? They're passionate for this. They love storytelling. They just not, God didn't make them writers. So it's like, well, how about making them producers then? So I was thinking about this when a woman came up to me and said, at a talk I gave, and said, what's your dream? And I said, my next dream is a business program for executives and producers. And she said, how much? And I said, well, $250,000 a year for about 4 or 5 years. And she said, I'll do that. That woman was Betsy DeVos, who is now our current Secretary of Education, by the way.
Oh,
but anyway, we launched the executive program, and that's been going strong. In some ways, it's the most successful program we've run. You don't have to have talent to be a producer in the way you do with a writer. So there's things to learn, but it isn't so much, did God build this house the way it is with writers, and so then we just started 3 years ago a directing program. And we held off on the directing for a long time because it's the most expensive program. You have to have stuff. And that was always an issue for us, that we wanted to be a very mobile, kind of not a lot of overhead. So they've worked that out now. So Act One is still going. If people are interested, it's still the best way in for a person of faith to network in and meet a community of other people who are passionate about visual storytelling. You need a network, and you need to get some common context. We'll teach you more in a summer than you will learn in a master's program in 2 years. I've learned this because I've taught in master's programs, and it's intensive, and it's like drinking from a fire hose. But if you love this stuff, it's a very great option.
Well, I want to come back. Well, there's a lot there, so I want to come back to the question of talent and craft. Mm-hmm. I want to come back to that question of needing stuff. And even networking. But I'm an English professor, so let me go back to the thing that is maybe the core for me, just about storytelling. Mm-hmm. You've said it in a couple of different ways that there's really a crisis in storytelling. There's a crisis in stories in America today, in the church, and in Hollywood. So could you elaborate on that? What's the crisis in our stories and our storytelling?
I'm going to point to a guy named Robert McKee, whose book Story has pretty much been the standard for screenwriters to read in Hollywood for about 20 years now. It supplanted Sid Field's book Screenplay, which had been the kind of industry Bible for people learning to be screenwriters. Unfortunately, Story has kind of been supplanted now by a very formulaic book by Blake Snyder called Save the Cat. Which tells writers on page 17 you have to have this, and on page 20 you have to have that. And, it's unfortunately that's every comic book movie that's out there is Red Save the Cat. Having said that, Robert McKee's book Story, he identifies that storytelling is in crisis in Hollywood and then consequently the whole world, because Hollywood has been the center of global storytelling since the 20s, 1920s. The problem is rooted in a moral crisis. So the first problem is, if the society is confused about what a good choice is, and in fact it becomes controversial what a good choice is, we don't know then what to have our heroes do in stories. And when so what is the heroic choice now becomes an area of dissension as opposed to the point, the goal. So, for example, if you look at the Odyssey and say, well, the goal is for Odysseus to get back home and be with his wife and son. That's what we're all heading towards. And so the choices he makes are to go that direction. But if instead I say to you, well, supposing he should stay with Calypso. Maybe he should stay with Calypso. Hey, she's being a sex slave of a goddess is not a bad option. Why shouldn't he? Who are you to say that it's better for him to go and be with his wife? So now,
and why return to the family patriarchy?
Exactly, right? So this confusion in the society about what heroic choices are is making the storytellers also hold back. So many stories that we see, they don't really offer the audience a point of view in terms of this is a good choice, this is a bad choice. They kind of put it out there and say this is a choice. And then the writer holds back from really asserting, through the consequences that this is a good choice or bad choice. It's interesting because McKee is not a Christian. He isn't a believer in any sense. In fact, he's quite antithetical. But he sees that this is harrowing out story a bit, and a story's essential function is to help us process our values communally in a culture, in a society. But that if you say, no, well, we can't assert any real, declaration on values here, now what are we doing?
So you could sort of say in the terms of our core, if you don't know your Nicomachean ethics, you can't really function in the poetics either.
Okay, very good. Yeah, absolutely. So confusion of right and wrong and the hesitancy of the storytellers who traditionally in societies are the ones who host the forum about what heroic activity is, what good and bad looks like. Now, our storytellers, they want to sell more than that. They want to be popular more than that, and so they're holding back. In some cases, now there's another whole propaganda thing going on that people on the right are very aware of comes out of Hollywood, but that's not most of what's being made. Most of what's being made is a refusal to take a side, it seems to me, in a lot of issues, which in itself is taking a side.
So can you give me an example of a recent film that had this sort of story problem, and then what would be a film that would be an answer to that? It would be a really well-told story.
Okay, well, let me start with the one that would be a really well-told one. I'm going to point to Green Book, which just won the Academy Award for Best Film, which is astounding. It's the first best film in the last, I think, 5 or 6 years that actually was the best film of the year, I think, and it won. But this is a film about two men who have every reason to be averse to each other. They come from completely different worlds, and worlds that have every reason to be hostile to each other, both in terms of socioeconomic things, but racial factors, style in every way. And yet, they have a kind of interesting mutual attraction for each other as friends, a kind of interest in each other. And then the friendship then evolves, and they are able, through the friendship, to raise above themselves and become, both of them make a heroic choice in the movie because of the friendship. And it's like, wow, this is beautiful. This is a great movie that says it is better to pursue a friendship that maybe the world doesn't understand, but that is good and requires you to worry about what other people think. You know, it's better to do the right thing no matter what other people think than not. So very good. One that I would point to that would be an example of confusion was the movie that was nominated for an Oscar last year called Three Billboards, outside somewhere in Missouri. But Three Billboards, the idea here at the end of the movie was, maybe we should go and murder this guy who maybe was a murderer as an act of vengeance. Maybe we should do an act of vengeance. And at the end, the two characters are like, okay, I guess we can do this. And then the movie kind of ends. And you don't really know if they actually did it. The movie's basically, it's up to them. The guy has it coming. And you know, he's kind of brutal. So if they decide to kill him, that would be the right choice for them.
For them. Yeah,
for them, yes. Right? You know, and so it's left. Now, this movie was nominated for the Oscar. And but to me, this is tremendous moral confusion. You don't tell people they get to decide if somebody should be killed in vengeance. And yet the writer refused to take a stand.
And that's opposed to a film that I know you and I both really love from a few years back, In the Bedroom, right, where there is a killing. And yet we see the horrific consequences of that in that final scene with Sissy Spacek and Tom Berenson in bed together.
Yeah, and people said to me, Christians, when I recommended that movie, they said, how dare you recommend a movie where people get away with murder? I said, they didn't get away with anything. Everyone in the theater knows they're going to hell. It's actually in the antechamber of hell, and nobody in the theater wants to be them. And it's like, and it's good because before you think some people might want to be them. Yeah, somebody did me dirty. I would love to act out my my own judgment on them and take revenge, etc. But then when you watch it play out, and it's like, no, they are now trapped forever, and they're now alienated from each other too. And it's very clear in the movie.
Yeah, I love how it uses the resources of film to show the two of them in bed together and yet completely separate.
Yeah, it's very
powerful. And two powerful actors who are able to do that just with the tiniest bit of gesture.
Yeah, now what's great there is, so the writer, a director there has such a clear point of view, Tom Fields, about the need to forgive, and yet he doesn't put it all together for you. You have to, there's enough ambiguity in it that the viewer has to think about it and has to process what just happened here. And was this a good thing or not? And that is something else that's missing in a lot of storytelling, which is mystery. The idea of setting up a puzzle, that a story works as a puzzle for the audience to then have to unravel. It's the storyteller is building a car and then saying to the audience, you're going to drive this. You're going to take this somewhere. Unfortunately, especially people of faith, we don't trust the audience. So we have to tell them everything. We have to drive them there. There's nothing left for the audience to do, which is why our movies are derided.
And I love something you said yesterday, right, about how the terminus of this action really does reside in the audience, right, not in the author tying up it into a neat package, and the master mistress of your passion, Flannery O'Connor, mm-hmm. right, knew that, right, that we need to understand what happened to the grandmother. Not that the grandmother has to come to a nice, tidy package and they all get up and hug at the
exactly.
end.
Exactly. Flannery O'Connor was very comfortable damning her characters to redeem her audience. And I find most Christian storytellers today are not comfortable doing that at all. They need everybody to to come out okay. And returning to McKee, because raising O'Connor, you know, O'Connor has the genius of extreme talent. She's a genius as a storyteller, as a craftsperson. McKee makes the point that the other thing that's causing a crisis in storytelling, along with the moral problem, is that the two essential qualities that someone needs to be a good storyteller are the use of language and the instinct for story. So use of language is easy, right? Vocabulary. Can I say something? Can I tell you what happened in a way that for you is engaging? Two people can tell you the same story. One works, the other doesn't. It's all about, you know, partly the use of language. And so our students too often don't read enough anymore, so their vocabulary is ridiculous. They cannot express themselves in a way with enough variety, in enough the way that's interesting. So they are very limited in their tools of language. Number two, instinct for story. Where do you get that? Well, you read a lot of stories until it becomes obvious to you what a high-risk, compelling, convincing, motivating choice looks like. And this is the kind of thing that really can't be taught. You have to hang around it a lot. And again, they don't read. Our young people today just don't have enough exposure to classic stories to have that honed instinct to know, yeah, this will be a great choice in my story for my character to make. This will be a cool character quality to give my character. They don't have enough of a well of experience with story. So you have these two things that have made our stories kind of just boring, banal, and more consequentially, they're not doing their job by helping us figure out our values together as stories. So the moral problem united to the technical problem in storytelling. So a place like UD is the hope for the world, as far as I'm concerned, right? We're going to give our students a good, solid core that will give them the reservoir of great stories in history. Then they're going to be doing enough articulation, writing, and speaking that they are going to have a better tools of vocabulary to use. And finally, they're going to have their moral act together.
I think that's a wonderful way to see that, is that, right, the students who have that, as you say, the depth of experience, the depth of reading, that reading in Augustine and in Aquinas and a Chesterton and in Aeschylus and a Sophocles gives you enough of that experience and background to then, as you come to learn the craft, that can hone your instinct and your talent. Because no one picks up a cello and says, I'm just going to emote on this cello. You devote yourselves to years and years. No one walks out into the baseball field and says, I'll just throw a few pitches. Right? We all know in those fields that there's a dedication and a craft and a persistence in that craft. Mm-hmm. But it is then built upon the riches of who you are as a person.
Very, very true. And I have students who have natural gifts who aren't working in the field because they lack the resolve. And I have students who have less natural gifts who are working and doing well and putting out good work because they have the resolve to work at it. So, you know, we all want kind of naturally gifted people and geniuses, but they still need to be put through their paces. They need to pay their dues. They need to be introduced into the conversation that humanity has been having and for 2,000 years, 4,000 years, and then add their voice to it now. But that you have to be exposed to that conversation in a rigorous way. And so I applaud what UD is doing. And for me, I've figured it out. It's much easier to teach an interesting person how to be a screenwriter than it is to teach a screenwriter how to be an interesting person. So I'm hoping some of yours you'll send my way, and we can in a weekend or a summer teach them, you know, how to be screenwriters.
Well, thank you. Speaking of conversation, a marvelous conversation today. And thank you all for being with us here on UD Podcasts. I'm Dr. Greg Roper, Chair of the English Department here at the University of Dallas, and we'll hope to have more of these for you.